Now let us pray. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on a throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on a throne of my consciousness.
Peace, bliss, amen. Well, a funny thing happened on the way to service tonight. Ended up in the wrong place. And on the way, there was a discussion around responsibility, detachment, shame. All of those kinds of good things come up. And what is it to live a life of a detachment? It is to plan with the best of intentions, to execute with all the will, all the power that God gives us to do so, and then to let go of the results. If victory is there, if success is there, that is up to God. If something falling short of that comes about, then that is also up to God. So then the ego thinks, well, if I don't stay attached to the end result here, maybe I'll get lackadaisical, maybe I won't care, I'll somehow lose control of all this, or all those kinds of imaginings come up. And the thing is this, that actually, as we stay attached to the end results, we actually get less mindful of the steps that are required in order to get where we're going, because we're always anticipating, our emotional energy is someplace else other than right where we're at. So if we do what we're doing, we make a plan, we make a goal, we set out to do that goal, and then with the best of intentions, the best of efforts, trying to strive to do it perfectly, the best that we can, then we are focused right where we're supposed to be. And if we're focused there, then the outcome is more assured to come out right. We feel at peace with ourselves. We feel calm, even in the doing, even in the midst of the project, and it looks like perhaps it won't come about. Lots of oppositional forces are there. If we're attached to the outcome only, we can give in to despair. If we're paying attention to exactly what we can do in that moment, then we bring our full force of our personality as God has made us into that project. And so that perfection can come about. It's an interesting thing when you hear some of these athletes or nations that go to war, they say, God, be on our side, right? And what if the other side is also saying, God, be on our side? Does God need to choose sides? I think that prayer to God is not to change God. Prayer to God is to change ourselves. And if we open ourselves to God's grace and to God's light, and the power that God gives us to be able to be in this world, and we give it our all, it may be in keeping with God's will that we are not to win that particular battle, that there is a higher purpose in that. Perhaps there's a great lesson for us to learn around humility, Maybe there's other lessons that are involved. Perhaps for the other individual, there's great lessons to learn in having that victory and being able to build on that. If somebody who is a very good athlete suddenly gets injured, for instance, it can seem like a great travesty, or maybe they lose a race that otherwise they would go on to a professional career, and instead of doing that, they go back to medical school and they complete their medical studies and become a doctor. That's what God had in mind for them. That's fulfilling a higher purpose for them than becoming a professional athlete. So for us to know, for us to judge what is the right outcome in any particular situation, we don't know. We don't have enough information. But if we rely on that divine source in us, if we rely on God within us, He knows. So in that sole reliance, we trust that our prayer, that this will be fulfilled for the highest good of everyone concerned, will be fulfilled in whatever happens. So that's what it means to surrender the results, surrender the end. Detaching end from act with act content, as the Gita says. Detaching the end, what that end goal is from the act, we're focused completely on that act, with act content. Do that act perfectly and leave the results up to God. So good lesson today. I'd like to read from the vision by Papa Ram Dass, Importance of Satsang. It is perfectly true that satsang is essential for keeping ourselves awake to the consciousness of the Lord within us. But satsang can be efficacious only if we prepare our mind by a constant thought of and a keen aspiration for God. To awaken us to the life of the Spirit, the society of a God-realized soul is essential. Through satsang, or communion with saints, we shall gain the need for vairagya and a keen aspiration for realizing God, which together lead on to Him. Know that the divine power manifest in the great Mahatmas is capable of performing miracles, but we must have faith in them. By faith alone, we could attain high and ambitious ideals. If we want spiritual illumination, we must strenuously work for it by concentrating all our thought on the supreme goal of life, the immortal reality that dwells within us. Merely running after saints without faith and a sincere aspiration for God is of no use. However, before we could know for certain the particular saint by whose contact we would receive the needed spiritual awakening, we ought to go for his darshan. We must come into personal contact with living saints. By mere correspondence, we shall obtain comparatively little from them. Instead of carrying on correspondence with the Mahatmas, it would be well for us to pay a visit to them and have our doubts cleared by personal communion. Whenever we have to take a decision in matter spiritual, we should go deep into the recesses of our own heart and decide for ourselves as to what we should do in order to help our evolution toward the knowledge of our divine nature. Let us not think that by merely joining a mission or a society, we shall attain liberation. What is needed is earnest aspiration, an inner awakening of the Spirit. This can be kindled only by the divine touch of a saint. Then will follow spiritual growth. Further, satsang has no meaning without self-discipline. In other words, by tapascharya alone, we can fit ourselves for satsang, benefit by the society of saints and win their grace. We are all children of God, ever basking in the sunshine of His all-merciful grace. And when we feel that, as we do by handing ourselves over to Him, we have nothing to worry about. Therefore, let us take complete refuge in him. If we do so, that very instant, we shall realize his magnificent glory, infinite power, and peace. But all cannot have at once the required aspiration for God. One must have experience of this world. It is necessary preparation for spiritual life. To knock about for some time and undergo hardships and travails in the world is a necessary experience. The more bitter the experience, the more wise does a person become. Encouraging for all of us. We have to touch the secret springs of life. This cannot be done unless we churn our inner life with the rod of suffering and tribulation. The varying experiences we undergo are really for our good. Intimate contact with the world and its affairs enables us to understand life's mysteries. The ashram provides opportunities for satsang. Every individual who comes in touch with the ashram ideal should work out his own destiny so that he might realize the all-perfect divine nature of his being. Real service can be possible only when it becomes a spontaneous outflow of a life utterly dedicated to God. Jesus Christ said, "First seek ye the kingdom of God, and everything else then be added unto you." So first seek the Lord within yourself. Possess the full knowledge of him. Have his infinite and dazzling vision. And then you will have rendered the highest service to the world, to the ashram, and to yourself. Satsang is a wonderful word. Sat means the eternal self, truth. It is the static, formless, undivided self of God. It resides beyond all creation. Sang means association, to come into proximity of. And so satsang means that association with the eternal self. In order to get the benefit of full satsang and to be able to enter into that consciousness, we have to develop a keen aspiration. When I was first coming on this path, my one prayer to God was to develop in me a keen aspiration for him, an overwhelming aspiration for him, a desire to seek him beyond everything else. I realized that I might gain things of this world, but that those things in and of themselves would not bring me the full benefit that I would have in realizing God. Now, we live in this world, and so we have aspirations within this world. The thing is this, is that we can make that an aspiration that God has through us. If it is to care for our family and our children, that is God who is desiring that care for our family and our children through us. If it is to make some effective change in this world for a higher order, to bring some light in, to bring some good in, then see that as God aspiring for that through you in order to bring good things for the society and to bring development within your own soul. So this is one level of satsang. It is to gain that real and true aspiration for God and to see all other aspirations, all other desires in this world as an aspiration ultimately for God and fulfilling of God's will. What to do in order to gain that true zeal and that aspiration. As Papa outlines here, to come into association with souls, with saints and God-realized beings who have that real aspiration within themselves or who have realized it within their own lives. It's been compared to an individual who is like a soggy log. And that soggy log is put in close proximity of a burning log. And as that soggy log resides next to the burning log, it starts to hiss, it starts to steam, and gradually and slowly it starts to dry out through its association with the burning log. Eventually, some little spark jumps from the burning log, lands on what was once the formerly soggy log, and it too begins to blaze with that light. Gradually, the whole log is consumed with that fire. And through that fire, it turns into a blazing light. And it too resembles the original blazing light of the first log. This is what it's like for the aspirant to come into proximity of a divine being. We feel a quickening of our spirit. We feel the power of God coming from that one. We feel an inner transformation. If we attune ourselves to that one, even while in ordinary mundane activities, we will feel a certain attunement. We will feel a certain vibration coming from that one, because their souls are inwardly always humming, unheard by any, God, God, God. That vibration is awake in them. It's alive in them. And it manifests through them in all their activities. Their minds are blazing with that light. They have become the dried out log that has become fully engulfed in the flame of divine spirit. And through that engulfment, it spreads that contagion throughout all who are receptive. To another soul who has no receptivity, that individual appears to be like any other individual. When Jesus went to his hometown and said that, lo, the time is here, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand, they said, who is he? He's a carpenter. He's Mary's son. He's Joseph's son. Who is he to be saying such words? And Jesus said, a prophet is not honored in his own land. And so over-familiarity breeds contempt. And this is true in all the relationships of our life. I think that respect is the cornerstone to all true friendships. And if there is respect lacking there on any level, then friendship is destroyed. The relationship goes into a downward spiral. When we have respect, we hold the light within that individual. Now, that light may be deeply buried. It may not be easily visible. We may see only darkness and shadows. We may see only unlovely characteristics. But if we pierce the veil of outer appearances, we will see the soul within that one. Now, the soul within that one may be struggling for expression. It may be overwhelmed with the storms of anger or sadness or ignorance that overwhelm it. And if we join in with that cacophony of voices of ignorance, then we only reinforce that ignorance that is already being made fully manifest within that one. But if we pierce the veil, look behind the outer signs that that one is manifesting, and go deep within their soul and look for the light, look for some goodness, then we are more likely to find it. And even if it is only a faith and a trust that goodness, that light, lies somewhere underneath there, then we help to reinforce that light. We help to bring it out in some way by constantly holding it in our minds, never being deceived by the mask of worldly expression. It is up to each one of us first to change ourselves. And through changing ourselves, as Master used to say, we help to change thousands. It is through this self-transformation that goes from one person to the next, that all become engulfed in that flame of spirit. And so it is each one of ours' responsibility, and we need to ask ourselves in every one of our relationships, in every one of our activities, Are we holding respect for each one that we meet as the cornerstone of our own relationship with them? Do we make that manifest, or do we treat others with a lowering disrespect? Do we not honor God within them, whether it is apparent in them or not? And sometimes when you find somebody with a very unlovely personality, you do everything in your power to try to find the good in them. You become like the poor rat at an Anandashram. Mother Hamilton was there in an Anandashram in 1958, and there was a rat that was visiting the ashram on a daily basis, and they tolerated it okay. Then one night, Mother Krishnabai woke up, and the rat was nibbling on her toenails. Well, that was kind of the end of the rat. And of course, at the ashram, they don't harm anything, unless it's a little bug usually. Then they might swat that, send it on to a higher life form. But with the rat they put into a car, Mother saw that there's some activity with the car, and then the car zoomed off. She suspected that it might have to do with this rat. So she went to Papa and she said, "Papa," she said, "did you send the rat away?" And he nodded his head, "Yes." He said, "Yes, we sent him down to the next village. We'll let the chaps down there enjoy him for a while." And so sometimes when you meet an unlovely personality, you just send him on down to the next village, you know, and let those chaps enjoy them for a little while. Why get caught up in the drama? Why get caught up in what somebody else's misery is? Why not reside in your own light of your own being? By residing there, you keep there the light burning. You keep that flame alive. If you become too much occupied with somebody else's darkness, then you yourself become dark. Now, if you are to be a light for others, don't go as a dark light out into the darkness, but rather stand as a lighthouse stands and cast out your light and let all those who are drawn to the light come to you. Don't go running out after them into the dark, or else both you and they may fall into a deep, dark pit. But rather, let your light shine. Let your love shine. Let your joy shine. Let your wisdom be guided by actions. And if you do this, others will see that. They'll feel the difference within you. They'll just say, "You know, when I'm around you, I just feel such peace, or I feel such joy, or I see such a light in you. I want some of that too. What is your secret?" And then you can begin to share with them a little bit at a time. You know, some people come for a little thimbleful, and other people want the whole ocean. So don't give somebody who wants a thimbleful the whole ocean. You'll overwhelm them, and they'll get to be too much. It's a little bit like with our children, you know. Sometimes they open up one of those golden moments where they give us an opportunity to commune with their souls. And we want so much to give them everything that we start pouring out all of our wisdom of all the ages. Well, they get about 10 seconds of that, and then they're off to something else. And they've gotten what they wanted. They've gotten fulfilled. So show respect to another person by attuning yourselves to what they're needing, what they're asking for. Maybe they just want a little bit. Give them that. And then if they come back and they say, "Oh, that was so wonderful. Give me more." Then you give them more of yourself, more of your light, more of your wisdom. And in this way, let this wisdom spread. Let it move out into the world. Let all learn to attune themselves to their own divine consciousness. Many people struggle with the idea that, well, I don't know if I want to become spiritual, thinking that it's this stereoscopic kind of view of the world that's very rigid and, you know, very disapproving of other people and other things. And it's not that at all, because God is alive. God is life itself. He's created this world. He must have a sense of humor. After all, He did create us. And that's got to be living proof that He has a sense of humor. And so if He has a sense of humor, if He has the fun, then God is that fun. He is that humor. He is that joy. He is the all in all of life. And as Mother used to say, if you're in business with God, you're in business with all of life. because God created it all. So it is not becoming a very narrow type of person, very disapproving of the whole rest of the world, but rather it's to become filled with joy, with life, with intelligence, with the desire to grow and to learn and to become more and more. And as you touch in with the Spirit of God, rather than finding that all the questions are perhaps answered for you in a way that's true, as you open yourself to that intuitive wisdom, answers do come to you spontaneously, intuitively, completely, to where you feel it with every cell of your being. But also comes the wonder, comes the gratitude. I think that as we approach God and we feel more of God's presence, gratitude just naturally begins to well up inside of us. Gratitude for all the things that we're given. Gratitude for this living presence that is residing right within us. So you see, at first we seek out satsang, association with truth, through God's saints, because it is living in them, it is alive in them. But that's not the end point, you see, because the absolute end goal is to come to that place within ourselves where we find that light blazing within ourselves. And when we do that, we find that that light blazing within ourselves and the light that we had seen within those realized beings is one and the same thing. I had a discussion not too long ago of somebody who had been a devotee in Mother's group. And through the course of their experiences, they started to be lifted up into some of these higher nature of experiences. What I find to be the case so many times is that when these experiences start, great temptations come up along with them. The stronger the light that comes into our life, the stronger the oppositional force that comes in to take us away. And so this great battle starts. In this devotee's case, she was swept away with this oppositional force. And since that time, as often is the case, there is a lot of justification going on about why that was the case and how others didn't live up to their part. You know, it's a good case of projection. And so in the course of the discussion was, well, you know, I used to follow Mother and she was guru, but I realize now I don't need a guru. You know, I'm sufficient to the case. And that is the ego speaking. Because whenever any realized soul rises up and becomes one with their own infinite nature, they realize that that one who stood as teacher and as guide and guru for them has that same light residing within themselves as the devotee finds residing within themselves. And then there is no difference. So you see, that's a good test when this notion that you can be your own guru. But Jesus said, that's like the blind leading the blind. It's like, what's the saying around lawyers, that a lawyer who has himself as a client has a fool for a lawyer. So, you know, it's a little bit like that. You can't see clearly when it comes to your own self. And that's true for all of us. We look at somebody else and we see their life and their faults, perhaps, or their virtues. And it's much easier to see in another person than it is to see in ourselves. So when we see it in another person, whether it's their virtues or it's their faults, if we take that as a direct and personal lesson coming to ourselves, oh God, you're showing me by this play that's going on outside of me how this virtue operates in the world and within the soul, or you're showing me how this fault results in a way that doesn't work well for the individual or for those around them. And so you don't concentrate on it as a fault of another, but rather as a lesson to yourself. And if we do that, we'll be constantly drawing lessons from this world. We'll be constantly drawing lessons from those people around us whether they're showing virtuous qualities or qualities that fall far short of them. And so this is a wonderful path and a wonderful life in which we are geared to come into this ultimate inner satsang. And the inner satsang is when you come into that blazing light of your own self. And through repeated contact with great souls and with those who represent and have that light, other devotees who are also aspiring for that light, that through that association, it makes the light within us burn far brighter than it would if we were just on our own. And through that, that light begins to grow and grow and grow until it consumes all impurities, and we finally come face to face with our own oneness with that infinite spirit. We feel that final emancipation from all things that draw us from that absolute consciousness of peace, of bliss, of the life force power of God within us and all around us, of that intuitive wisdom that is part of our own nature once it is wakened within us. And so this is our calling. This is for what we are aspiring for. And so to attune ourselves to it every moment of every day, and with every thought, every word, every action, we draw closer to that ultimate satsang, that ultimate association with truth and the great self residing within us. I just will stop there and see if anyone has any questions about what I've spoken about or their own sadhana at this point.
Been 6 or 7 hours since I even remembered God was around, let alone keeping my consciousness there.
I see you're absent of your bells. Jill had a wonderful method of wearing an anklet with little bells on it, and every time she heard the bells, it reminded her of God. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Ram. Remembrance is the key to everything, of course. If we fall into forgetfulness, then all is lost in that moment. So certainly to put reminders around us, that's one of the reasons for some of the pictures of the saints and for inspiring messages that we might put around. But if we do fall into forgetfulness, then we inevitably come into a darkened state, and in that darkened state we suffer some painful circumstance, and that pain then becomes our awakener. We can either be led by wisdom or we can be driven with pain. And it's so much nicer to walk with our own volition through the door through wisdom rather than be dragged through the door through the whips of pain as we try to avoid them. Certainly our practice of meditating in the morning and the night is geared towards helping us to bring that into constant remembrance. But it is the practice, and in the practice it becomes a deepened routine. It becomes something that's sown into the unconscious, so that we might be going through the day and suddenly that remembrance comes to us spontaneously. And ultimately, it requires more sadhana, more practice, more intensity. And when you come into that awareness that lack of remembrance has been there, then a deepened prayer, God, you must see to it that I remember. Krishna says that he's in charge of all memory. I take a lot of comfort in that when my memory goes on the fritz. but to remember this divine presence that's in us and to have that awakened. You see, when we feel that presence in us, it's a positive feeling, it's an uplifting feeling. And the more we imbue the mind with that, the more we miss it when it's not there. And so we can ask God for this keen aspiration to make himself more tempting than any of the temptations of the world. And every time we move into that state of forgetfulness, that we deepen our prayer, we deepen our resolve, never let me forget thee. Let me always remember thee. And when we say that with the fullness of our heart, with the fullness of our soul, and turn ourselves very simple, like a small child in complete trust, to that infinite presence that's within us, how can it help but to respond to us? If you have a small child who comes to you and says, please, can you help me with this? And says in such a sweet voice and such open and trust, how can you say no? You cannot. And it is said that God loves us even more than the mother loves the small child. And so God must respond to us. And so when we soften our hearts to God, when we turn ourselves over to him in complete sincerity, then he cannot stay away from us. So just deepen that prayer and that keen aspiration. And if it's not there, then ask God for it. How can he say no? We can tell if our hearts are hardened or if they're softened. And if we soften our heart towards God, then we're making an opening. This idea around prayer has been coming to me more and more lately. This idea that prayer is not around changing God, that God's grace is always flowing to us, always surrounding us, pervading us. But prayer is creating a channel, an opening, that in that wall that we have created between ourselves and God, that wall of separation. And by the means of that prayer and the opening of that, that grace is allowed to flow in. And sometimes when we think that God is being very mean-spirited for not answering our prayers and not fulfilling what we want, if we turn that inside out and say, you know, it's not about God's grace, this is about my own stinginess. It's about my own blocked way with God. And that my part is to do whatever is in my will to open that wall. And really all God needs is an invitation. Please come in and change my nature. Change me. Transform me into somebody who has that keen aspiration for you. And when we do that, that is the key towards that revolutionary change that begins to happen inside. And so it is through our own openness, our own sincerity, our own heartfelt prayer, that our lives begin to change. And sometimes it's a case where we've gone a certain distance in realizing God, and that seeming darkness or oppositional force is really a signal that we're really on the verge of entering into a much larger, expanded vision of the universal grace that's all around us. And so we wonder sometimes, have I fallen? Have I come into some bad straits because I seem to be having this oppositional force come up against me so much, so hard? And if we would but know it, it's not actually that we've fallen. It's actually a compliment to us. It means that we're making progress and we're coming up against that next barrier that is higher and bigger and harder. We've constructed it ourselves, but we have the capacity now to move through it. And so we're coming up against that. And so it really means that we're making progress. But experientially, how we feel it is that we're going backwards. We're not doing as well. So we can take it as encouragement when that stronger oppositional force comes up that we're actually making progress. We're not going backwards. And it's a calling. It's a calling to go deeper, to open ourselves even wider to that divine intelligence and power and light that's residing in us. When we tell God, God, I want to realize you, we set into motion all these forces. The divine intelligence comes in and begins to organize our life in a way that is preparing the way for that to happen. But oftentimes we get in the middle of that and we say, well, God, I didn't mean that. That's not what I meant. I didn't want all this oppositional force. I didn't want to have to face all of this. I just wanted it kind of handed to me on a silver platter. But that's not how it happens. It's not how it happens. We have to face everything that we've done in this outgoing journey from God. And in facing it and piercing the veil of illusion that that represents, then we go and draw closer to the light. It's like if you went out on a long journey out on a road, and at some point you decided to go back, and perhaps it was downhill most all the way, and then you turned around, the only way back to the city is going back the very route that you came. And so you have to trudge and traverse that whole way. But with each step forward, you get closer to your destination. So take heart. Does that make sense?
David, I understand what you, when you talked about respect, and I've had the experience of this great love falling. What should one do, like if you have, if you're in contact with someone who for whatever reason is constantly negative,
mm-hmm.
and it's like spears to your body, and it's like
mm-hmm.
the vibration is
mm-hmm.
What, you know, is it appropriate to say something to the person? To how does one hold on to one's own
mm-hmm.
peace and at the same time let the other person know that that is detrimental to
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, what is
yeah.
the best way?
Have you ever seen a portrayal of a person's life, or maybe you've known somebody in your own life, but perhaps in a movie or some dramatic representation? An individual who is being disrespected, perhaps for the color of their skin or their religion or through no fault of their own. And that individual holds themselves, even though they're being disrespected, they hold themselves with a sense of self-respect and dignity. They don't respond in kind. They have a sense of gravity and presence about themselves that transcends that situation, and they make the other person look very small. And it's obvious to all who's watching this, who is the person who is truly superior to the other. I realize that that's not a guideline around specific behavior, but specific behavior comes from that sense of gravity. If we find ourselves responding in kind, if we find ourselves becoming small and peevish and revengeful, then we're just really entering into the same plane that they're dealing with. And there's nothing uplifting or ennobling or life-changing about that kind of interchange. But if we hold ourselves in high respect in the first place, if we honor the light of God that is within us, and then secondly, treat the other with that same respect, even though they are treating us with disrespect, and it can be that we then convey to them what they're doing and the wrongness of what they're doing, or we may reply with them to them with silence. Or we may take a totally different tract, but within that moment, you will know how to respond if you're holding yourself in that gravity of that fullness of yourself and the respect that you're holding in yourself. And what you know is that you don't sink to lower levels in order to fight with them, perhaps on the same way that they're coming at you. And if you do that, number one, you change yourself and you hold yourself in that respect. And you never look back on that situation. You think, oh, I wish I would have acted this way, or I'm so sorry that I said these words. So number one is you can look back on that situation and you know that you handled it well. You handled it with self-respect. And the second is that you act as a model for the other person, that if they have any sincerity, if they have any integrity, they will recognize that difference between your behavior and their behavior. And they can't help but see the qualitative difference between those two things. Now, if you get somebody who has no sincerity and no integrity, and they're only out to abuse and to harm, then certainly we must protect ourselves against such ones. And to be a doormat, to be someone who's just run over, is not the right thing to do either, because that's not respecting God within ourselves. As Mother used to say, that Jesus said, you forgive somebody 7 times 70 times. Just 490 times, but sometimes you come up against that 491st time and you let them have it because they deserve it. But you do it with a full sense of self-control. You don't lose it. We may experience anger, but there's a part of us who is being a witness to the intensity that's being channeled through us. And we don't say things that are out of control. We don't perform actions that are out of control. We stay focused on that light and on that wisdom and let that energy move through those proper channels. And then we never have to look back and say, I'm so sorry that I behaved in that way. And that's the difference. And ultimately, we're responsible only for ourselves. And if somebody else acts in very, very small ways, the least that we can do is respond with showing them dignity and respect for the light that resides within ourselves and ultimately the light that resides within them also. I don't know if that's sufficient answer to the question.
Good reminders. She said that the greatest teaching is done in silence. What does he mean when he says that?
That inner vibration that a realized master such as Ramana Maharshi brings is best expressed when the body and the mind and the emotions become still. In the student. The teacher is already in the state of stillness. It's up to the student, the devotee, to attune themselves to that deeper vibration. If the mind is always being active, it can run right over truth and never even see it, and then wonder where it is. So when we quiet ourselves and become receptive in the deepest recesses of our own soul, an inner conviction becomes predominant within us that begins to eliminate all of our doubts. In that divine vibration, in that presence that begins to awaken within us, that is the inner guru. Guru meaning that which takes us from darkness into light. And certainly that inner vibration, when it awakens, that presence within us, that starts to become our guide. It informs us as to what we should do. It responds when we're on the right track. It grows and it builds within us. When we're on the right wrong track, it begins to contract and disappear within us. It comforts us. It brings us peace. It brings us inner joy. And so that awakening of the inner guru is best done when we become inwardly silent, receptive, empty. Empty of those habitual thoughts and sensations that are always captivating the mind and preoccupying it and distracting us from the deeper truths that are actually always available to us, only we're so busy with our lives that we never bother. We never bother. I think the greatest example of humility is God, because God, who has created all, sustains all, including ourselves, never withdraws his presence because we ignore him. As the saying says, the sun rises and falls on the just and on the unjust. God's presence, God's life, his intelligence is there always for all. And so there's no demand there. We're left with free will. And we can do as we choose. And so, in humble submission to our own free will, the divine will constantly creates, constantly sustains, without asking anything of its own self. But when we turn our minds and turn our life towards the divine, then the divine rejoices. It's like the small child being guided by the mother. If the child will allow itself, the mother's hand will come behind the child's hand. Now, if the child is obstinate, it'll say, no, I want to do it. Get away. Leave me alone. Mother says, all right. And it tries again and again. It gets so frustrated because it can't do something. And then finally the mother says, look, I'll help you. And it's so frustrated, it finally surrenders to the divine mother. And the mother comes in and guides them. See, if you just move it like this. See how this works? And when we feel that it's the Divine Mother's hand who moves behind our hand, her thoughts who are just behind our own thoughts, her feelings who are just behind our own feelings, her life force that flows through this body and allows it its capacity to act in this world, then we are residing in that deeper communion. And it is in that silence, that stillness. You see, words can be being spoken, and still that inner silence is there. That inner stillness is there. That's not true for most people. If they're speaking, all peace, all stillness, all silence is gone. Because they've not yet strongly enough attuned themselves to that inner silence to know that everything, all thoughts, all energy, all physicality, flows out of that divine inner silence. So that's what it means to be silent. Oh. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence,
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being,
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Also this week I'm going up to Prince Rupert, and because of how the planes were scheduled, I'm not going to make it back in time for next Sunday, so just to let you know that. And also we'll have an open house on September the 9th, which is the second Saturday of September, down at Cloud Mountain Retreat Center. And I won't be in silence then, so it won't be in silence, although I think they're going to have a silent retreat. So I think they'll ask us to be silent when we're out on the grounds. But I think in the house, as long as we're not too raucous, it's all right. You'll have a chance to see my new domicile and my new ashram cave. And I don't know if this one's complete with microwave or not, as my last one has been.
That's more of a tree house.
Yes, very nice. Services, of course, will continue as before, and we'll have some playing of tapes, but I've also have asked Larry and Peter to give some talks while I'm in silent retreat. And anything else that's missing? Just every second Saturday of each month, we'll have silent satsang down at Cloud Mountain Retreat, and you're all welcome to come. Currently, I'm thinking between 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock with a potluck lunch, and all done in silence. And many times they have silent retreats, so it's very nice to keep that silence and that spirit. The exception of that is December, which will be the third Saturday of the month instead of the second.
Would that be eating at the potluck of the dining hall, or?
No, I don't, because sometimes they have large retreats there and they'll need that for that. So we'll probably do that in my place. And we'll have meditation up at the Misty Meadows, I think it's called. It's a house really beautifully situated with some woods on one side and meadow lands and a nice territorial view on the other side. So there will be that. Also, I've been thinking, and people up in Canada seem to like the idea, but in April they have the second weekend of that month open, and for us to go ahead and reserve that. It costs $150. It's $50 a day for the retreat, and that includes a place to stay as well as meals. So when you break it down that way, it's very reasonable. But it's be $150 from Friday night until midday Monday. They found that makes the, if you're leaving on Sunday after getting there Friday night, it's almost like you've just arrived and you're going already. So it's midday Monday. So for people who would like to attend that, I'm going to see about reserving that for the second weekend of April.
So that would be for a silent retreat?
A silent retreat. Mm-hmm.
And they would have enough room to accommodate us all in cabins?
Yes.
Or someplace?
That's right. That's right.
It's up to 50.
So up to 50, and it would be accommodations and meals and places for us to meet.
The other thing is on the second Saturdays, wear good shoes, wear walking shoes.
That's
quite steep.
There's nice paths, but it is kind of going up.
Don't want to wear your pumps or something. It's not terribly far, but it's like a walk in the woods.
Fairly good trails, but yeah. A pair of walking shoes would do you well. And comfortable clothes, and bring your own pillows and meditation blankets and things like that, because there's not much in the room up there. And so, or if you want to bring a lawn chair or something like that, that's all right too.
And you'll be coming for Mother's Mahasamadhi also.
Yes, which I believe the 31st is on a Wednesday. And so I was thinking for out-of-town people, it might be nice for us to have a Saturday night, the Saturday before that, perhaps a Saturday night kind of gathering, and then maybe something on Wednesday, and that I could stay up for that time.
Will you be here this Wednesday, or are you in
route? I won't. I'll be en route. I'll be up in Prince Rupert, I think, on Wednesday.
We just have one more week with you giving service. Is that right? The weekend?
I believe so. If that's Labor Day weekend, I think that would be right. So time is drawing nigh.
So the first Saturday of September is a potluck at the Cones.
Yes.
Noon.
There's a
service.
That's up in Vancouver. And Friday night we will have a talk, and then Saturday we'll have potluck, open house kind of thing, and all are welcome for that too.
And then the Sunday's here, and then that's the next week that you're going to retreat.
Right. Mm-hmm. Go up the first Friday of every month, first and third Friday. Yes. It's all the announcements I can think of.
Is there, at one point you were thinking of written forms of communication or other things you might have you thought more about?
Yeah, once a month I'll respond to letters. And then once a month we'll have the silent satsang. I'm not going to have my computer there, so I won't do emails. Although I've told some people out of country that it's more difficult for that they can send things to Carla and then that she could bring it down and deliver it as a letter. But that doesn't count for Seattle people or Canadian people.
Yeah, you can email to Carla and she'll
probably have a
That Friday, that weekend that you'll be in Vancouver is the 1st of September.
Yes.
And the 2nd for the open house, and then the 3rd for service would be here.
That's correct,
so
yeah.
Just all the dates then.
Okay. And I just highly encourage you all to continue to come together for satsang, support each other, love each other, be the example for each other in getting your own realization. Make your spiritual deposits. There's lots of return, though, with those deposits. Because it's not only what you come to receive, it's also what you come to give, the light that is within you.
David, I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but if we had a little bit of social time before the service on Sunday, would that be
That would be fine, yeah. Oh, sure, sure, yeah. In fact, if we want to plan something like that, we certainly can.
Is that all right there?
Have an open house maybe for a couple hours beforehand. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, can make a point of showing up at the right place at the right time. So should we tentatively plan on 4?
3 or 4. Yeah.
3?
And we can have a little bit of food.
Okay. Just.
So is that here? Or
here.
That's here. I'll be here.
I wouldn't presume to plan it for Peter's.
Sure, Aaron
was
glad
to see you. Yeah.
Did you have that too?
Did you? Does everybody know Michelle? She's moved here. And I understand a nice job has been had. So, very nice. God takes care of everything. So nice to have you.
Yeah, I'd like people just to keep me in mind because I'm flying back to Indiana tonight and then pack up everything, including my son and my cat, and drive out. probably, I don't know when I'm leaving.
Yeah. Anything we can do at all to support you in doing that and welcoming you here and making things go as smoothly as you can, please let us know.
What's your boy's name?
Max.
How old's Max?
He's 12.
Ready for an adventure? Is he ready for an adventure?
He is. He's pretty good. Excited.
Uh-huh. He'd be a good co-pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good with Max.
Yeah.
In the next few months, so that's the challenging.
Mm-hmm. We'll get him out here too.
I think there's a lot of good things for him here too, but he's not quite seeing that yet.
Well, it's wonderful to have you.
Runs all week, but kind of a key time is Friday night and Saturday. They have fireworks and then they have demonstrations of kite flying. And there are people who are very professional kite flyers. But it's really a very wonderful thing to watch the kites.
Mm.
It's just amazing.
I know that's been a favorite thing of yours and Wynn's for quite a while.
And on Sunday they always have a competition to see how many kites they can get up in the sky, so everybody gets to fly the kite. And I look at it from the spiritual standpoint, that if you haven't flown a kite, it's a very freeing experience for your soul. It's really beautiful.
I read about in India, or in Tibet, where they have man-sized kites, and people actually fly up into the air in them. That always sounded fun. As long as you landed all right.
Yeah. Somebody you trust on the end of the string.
Yeah. A real heavy person.
Josh, I always got to try that out.
Nice thing about kite flying, unlike fishing, you don't have to buy a license.
Mm.
You have the clean fish, yeah.
Right.
And just a reminder, let us all practice that inner silence, even while we're active. It's quite a thing in the beginning. It's a little bit of a split mind, so to speak. But if you practice it, I think you'll find there's great benefit in being in that inner silence, even while in activity. And I think that, in truth, that is where the greatest teaching comes from. I bow to the light within all of you. Namaste. God's blessings and presence and light ever fill you, ever flow through you, and surround you. Om Tat Sat.